If you're flying into a new airport, how do you know where they keep the good coffee? Is the Wi-Fi good? What's the ground pickup situation? App in the Air makes all of this easy by crowdsourcing tips from different airports, the kind of stuff you might not easily find on a regular airport website. Check out the app for free by using the link in the show notes and get 20% off of your next flight when you book directly through App in the Air by using the code GeoBreeze at checkout. Thank you to App in the Air for partnering with this episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipina-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking.
The Man in Seat 61 is like the best website about train travel in Europe in general. Like, it is so comprehensive, very detailed. You can literally put in like, how do I get from this city to this city? And there's a whole post of like, here are the five different trains you can take and here's what they cost and here's where you should buy the tickets. It's really cool. So if anybody listening to this is trying to figure out train travel in Europe, maninseat61.com, I'm pretty sure. There might be a "the" there, but that website is phenomenal.
Hey there, points people. Madeline Saul began her points and miles journey in 2013 with her traveling consultant job and had to get a little bit more strategic after she left that job and didn't have corporate expenses on her credit cards all the time. Now, she uses her points and miles to attend concerts in other cities and plan last-minute redemptions without planning every day of her trips. She believes that the best use of points and miles is the one that you're actually going to use, and hot take, not always the one that has the best sense per point redemption. In this episode, Madeline and I talk about a points trip she took to Paris and how using public transit in Europe, and really most places where it's available, can save so much money and sanity. And we discuss some different tricks for navigating public transit while traveling. To offset the cost of public transit, I'd recommend using a card like the Chase Sapphire Reserve or Capital One card with Purchase Eraser. Alternatively, you could also use the World of Hyatt card to earn 2x on public transit purchases. If you're interested in any of these cards, please make sure you use a friend or creator's referral link. Do not apply through Google. If you would like to support this show when you open your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And now, on with the show. Hey, Madeline, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Thanks, Julia. Really good to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here and to learn all about your trip to France, which is fantastic, and how you got to stay at a hotel that had your same name. And before we get into all of that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get into points and miles?
Yeah, sure. So I really got into the points and miles space when I got my first job out of college. I was a consultant in healthcare IT. So I was traveling like 2-3 weeks every month. This company, for reasons I don't fully understand, didn't want to extend credit to really young people straight out of college. Some of them do, some of them don't. Mine didn't. So I had to get a credit card to charge all my hotel expenses and my dining expenses and things like that. So I was already kind of interested in it. And then I know this is pretty uncommon for points and miles people, but I actually, my first card was the Capital One Venture Rewards. That was the one I started out with. It was straightforward. I kind of understood it. It was easy to figure out. And then as I got more into the space, I really expanded more into the Chase ecosystem and Amex and kind of added things as I learned more. But really, for most of the time I was in consulting, I didn't really have to think that hard about how to earn points because you just get a lot. Like, you don't have to think about being strategic. You don't have to time things super well. You're just like, oh, I know I have, you know, thousands of dollars of expenses every month that aren't even mine. So I just like get to sail on like nothing's going on. But as I left that job, then I had to think a little more strategically of like, okay, I don't have this easy kind of access to spending in the same way. How can I pick a card at the right time and sort of get those bonuses and really think about how to maximize my use of transfer partners, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that makes sense. So once you were racking up all of these different points, what were some of the first redemptions that you got to take?
Oh, wow. So honestly, most of the time I would just like get cash back or kind of redeem purchase eraser sort of things. Cause I would do stuff like go to Chicago for a weekend and take a bus there. And I would just redeem against that bus. It was pretty kind of low key redemptions to start out. And then I also had a lot of benefits from my work where I could easily add hotel nights and things like that. So it was usually better for me to actually pay cash for those, because I'd get corporate rates and stuff versus like using my points for those things. I didn't really start to use my points for as many things until I did more international travel, both for my personal enjoyment, but also with my partner. And then that's when I really started to think about that more.
Yeah, that makes sense. When you were first starting out, did you make any mistakes with points and miles that you want to tell kids or anybody listening? Hey, kids, don't do this thing that I did.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a reason you ask this for every episode. Everybody's got one of these stories. The biggest thing that I didn't learn early on was how valuable kind of transfer partners can be. So I was very much the kind of travel hacker person who would say, oh, okay, if I'm going to fly United, I need United miles. If I'm going to fly American, I need American miles. And it took me, and I would argue, like, this is still an area I'm like, don't feel like I have a lot of depth in. And it takes a while to really get a lot of depth in. But that, I didn't explore that very early on in my journey. And I kind of wish I had learned more about it earlier, especially because at the time that I had that Capital One Venture Rewards card, they didn't have all the transfer partners yet. But now that they have them, it's like even more valuable than it was at the time, just for the purchase eraser sort of stuff. So yeah, I think that was a missed opportunity early on, but I've learned there's a lot of information out there, which is good.
Yeah, for sure. Those transfer partners can be really, really valuable. What are some of your favorite transfer partners these days to move your points to?
Well, it's always, I mean, my favorite one is the one I can find availability on is the Truth. But the ones I tend to like are the ones that are good for short hauls. So like the Avios program comes to mind. I don't fly American that much, but when I do, I have this sort of stash that I tend to go towards. I'm also learning more about Turkish Miles and Smiles for United flights, that sort of thing. I'm not typically doing these like big business or first class redemptions. So I tend to look for the really good sort of economy of transfers. And actually I don't know if this counts as my favorite redemption if I never took the trip, but I was really excited back in 2020 when I used some of my Avios to book Aer Lingus from Chicago. They essentially, for economy, you can, for 13,000 miles each way, you can fly direct from Chicago to Dublin. And for me, that was really exciting because it's like, you know, I wanted to do this big solo trip for 2 weeks in Ireland in September of 2020. You can imagine how that went. It didn't, but I was excited about it and I still want to do it. But what's cool, what I like in particular about that redemption is Aer Lingus has a really generous off-peak awards chart. So you can, most of the year is off-peak. I mean, this is one of my, I guess, general travel tips, but flying in shoulder season is so great. Going anywhere in shoulder season is great. And when I talk a little bit more about my trip to France, I'll get into more about some of the advantages I kind of experienced from just traveling in a time when not as many people were around. For flights specifically, I don't book the flights like 3 days before I'm going to leave. I'm not that sort of just in time with the flights. The flights I'll typically still look at least like 6 to 8 months out for international, just because I think it's easier to just like get the schedule you want, get the location you want. I'm based in Madison, Wisconsin, so we're a pretty small airport. So I'm not always flying out of Madison. So sometimes I have to kind of look around like what's going on in Chicago, what's in Milwaukee, what are my best options of those different airports. So that'll still like do ahead of time, at least 6 or 8 months out, but not necessarily like a year out and not any closer typically than like 3 months out.
So on the scale of super last minute to super planned ahead, where did this France trip fall in that scale?
Let me answer it this way. There are a lot of things I did do research on, but I didn't necessarily like book reservations for. So for example, I spent a lot of time learning about trains in Europe. So by the time we were in Europe, I was able to say, okay, here's how we're going to get to these places. Like, here are our options. Here's how we do it. There's also this pass called the Eurail pass, or the, I think it's Interrail if you're in Europe, but essentially it's this pass you can buy that gives you access to trains and like travel all over the all the different European train systems for either like a certain number of continuous days or like a certain number of days in a given period. So my trip, we each bought passes that were, it was essentially like 30, it was within 30 days, you can activate the pass like 5 times. So we were able to use those passes when we wanted to switch countries. And that's typically when we use them to say, okay, today we're going to go from Antwerp to the Netherlands. We ended up staying in Utrecht. So essentially you can activate the pass and it basically just allows you to hop on the train. So I've already prepaid my ticket in a sense, but I don't have to buy it that. There's a lot of nuances and rules to how those passes work that you can read about on that website I mentioned. A lot of other travel bloggers write about these passes. So that part, in a sense, you could say was really planned. Like I really knew how to do it once I knew where to move, but I didn't know where I was going to go. I didn't know like exactly where I was going to stay. And even on the most basic level, which cities you were going to go to. So although I expected to probably go to France, we didn't know for sure. We didn't decide we were going to go to France until 2 days before we went to France. In that sense, it was like we plan only the next move. So not every move, but just the next place we're going to head to.
So this is the one where you flew into Belgium and then decided from there to go to France.
Exactly. So we started in Antwerp. So we knew we were going to be there. We actually booked our Airbnb for 3 days and only ended up staying 2 because we decided, all right, let's just go to the next place. We're ready. So I knew that part. And then we had to be back in Brussels at the end because that's where our flight was leaving. So I took care of those 2 pieces, but then the rest of it was totally open. We went, and I think this is relevant to mention, in October. So October in Europe, not a really busy travel season. It's much busier around the time of Christmas markets. It's busier in the summer. So I think a lot of the reason this was able to work is because there aren't as many people traveling during that time. So you don't have to worry about finding hotels or Airbnbs. Like it's not like stuff's really heavily booked. So that would be a tip I would give to people. If you're trying to do something like this, don't travel during the busiest season because there's a really good chance in the busy season, places sell out. There are major festivals or activities happening in a city and like you just could be SOL, honestly. Like you can't create hotel space where there's no hotel space. So definitely consider, and you can always look this up online. It's pretty easy. You can say something like France shoulder season or France off season. And you can Google this stuff and figure out kind of what that right time is. Of course, this helps also when you have flexibility in terms of when you can travel somewhere, but definitely don't try to wing it at a busy time because you'll be sad and perhaps without a place to stay for the night. And I don't want that for you.
What did you fly in and out of Belgium?
We flew United, actually. And another kind of interesting part of this. So this speaks to the importance of being flexible with your travel hacking strategy. So originally, I opened up Delta SkyMiles Gold card. Don't make that your first card. Please don't make that your first card. But I knew I wanted it because I had a stash of Delta miles from my corporate travel. And I just wanted a little bit more to top it off, thinking I'll be able to use this to buy our flights to Belgium. So that was the thinking behind it. It's like I had a really specific kind of use for them in mind. But because Delta has dynamic award pricing, when the time actually came to like, okay, let's actually book this, it was it was wild. Like it wasn't worth using them. And what, somehow I didn't have enough, even though I had like 200,000, like I had a lot of miles and I still couldn't get a decent flight. And it just didn't make sense at that point. So I had these Delta miles, but I'm like, no, this isn't, I'm not going to use this. But I ended up finding what to me was actually a pretty cheap cash fare out of Madison, my home airport. And if you live near a big airport, you don't necessarily appreciate like how nice it is to be able to fly out of the airport closest to you. Like in my case, like I'm willing to pay a premium for that sometimes to not go 3 hours to Chicago or even an hour and a half to Milwaukee. It like really helps. So because the flights out of Madison were under $1,000, it was like somewhere around 800, I think, which isn't cheap. Don't get me wrong. Not cheap. But we were able to fly out of our home airport. That ended up actually making the most sense. And then I charged that, I'm pretty sure, on my reserve card. So again, like I'm just constantly building this stash of points that I was then able to use on the ground. So I'm sitting on my cell phone, like furiously trying to transfer my points to Hyatt so I can book the Hyatt Paris Madeleine, which shares the same name as me. I must have been fate. I wasn't planning to stay there, but here we are. So even in the things I was paying in cash for, I'd try to be strategic. Like, okay, how am I going to use the earnings from this flight to kind of further this trip while we're there too?
If you are listening to this episode thinking, I wish I could travel like this, but I don't know where to start, I offer free credit card consultations by email at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. Additionally, I host a masterclass and group coaching session each month through the Patreon. We've also added a new Patreon feature. Once you've been in the Patreon for 12 consecutive months, I will gift you a vacation voucher to the city of your choice. I've also added an option to sign up for an annual membership. With this option, you will get 2 free masterclasses each year, and you'll get your vacation package voucher upfront. You can find more information about the vacation vouchers, consultations, and more in the show notes. This week's Patreon shout-out goes out to Angel. Thank you so much for being a part of the GeoBreeze Travel Patreon community.
So tell us about the Hyatt Paris Madeleine. What's it like?
So the thing, I think like when people go to Paris, they feel like they have to stay in particular arrondissement, like particular neighborhoods. They're like, oh, this is the best one or this is the best one. The truth is they're all pretty close to each other unless you're really in the outskirts. But like a lot of the major hotels try to be in the center of the city. So it's not a huge deal like to be at one that's like maybe not the most kind of central arrondissement because the train system is really, the metro is so good in Paris. And then also it's a really cool city to walk in. Like it's awesome to just like walk around anyway. So I'm pretty sure, and I'd have to fact check this. I'm pretty sure the Hyatt Paris Madeleine, it's like in the 8th, maybe. It's like not quite center, but it's like a little bit, it's within walking distance of most of the major sites that you'd want to see. And it's, you know, it's not the fanciest hotel. It's like a Paris hotel that's relatively kind of compact. So the rooms are sort of small, but it's not like a super, I wouldn't call it like a super luxury hotel. It's luxury because of where it is, not because of the hotel itself, if that makes sense. So I just like, for my angle was really, okay, Paris is expensive to stay in. Airbnbs are not really legal there. And there's a lot of restrictions and limitations around them. And Airbnb, that was actually the only place our whole trip where Airbnbs were hard to kind of come by, of like, here's one that's in a good area and like is a reasonable price. So I was really more thinking like, here's a place where we can stay. I've got points to cover it. And it can just act as the home base while I'm out walking all day. And that's generally how I think of my hotels. You know, it's like, it's a place to sleep at night. It's a place for my stuff, but I don't really care as much about the luxury of the hotel itself as much as like, is it in a good location? Like, can I get to it easily? Can I get to public transit easily? Is it, you know, does it have the ability for me to either book it with points or like get a decent cash rate and just, you know, really be there to enjoy the place I'm in as opposed to like the hotel itself. There are, however, really beautiful hotels in Paris too, that if that's more your scene, you can definitely find those sorts of places. I know Max from Max Miles Points was recently in Paris and like has a ton of great reels and stuff about all the small luxury hotel properties he stayed in. And like, he's got a lot more information on that than I do. But yeah, the Hyatt Paris Madeleine is a nice hotel. It does what you need it to do, but it's not the sort of place that's like, oh, like this is a really memorable hotel. If you want like the really memorable hotel experience, like you probably want to be at the Park Hyatt Vendome, like one of those like really truly luxury properties.
What does in the eighth mean?
Oh, the arrondissement, the neighborhood. Yeah.
Is there like an in the seventh or in the sixth? So in case everybody listening is wondering, no, I have not been to Paris and I am going to mispronounce everything. Yeah, for everybody wondering, no, I can't pronounce anything in French. If you want to find out just how bad I am at pronouncing French, check out episode 19 featuring Emmanuel from Card Pointers, whose last name I could not pronounce. So if you want to have a laugh at how bad I am at pronouncing French, there you go. Is there like an in the sixth or in the fifth or in the seventh or something like that?
It's not like clockwise or something in the way you might expect. That'll make sense for those of you listening. If you actually look at a map of Paris that like shows the different neighborhoods, they kind of radiate out from the center, like from the Seine, but they're not organized in a way, at least that I've been able to figure out, that's like numerical or you follow this one path and you can understand which neighborhood is where.
All right. Yeah, one of these days I'll go to Paris and then I'll see if I can figure it out.
I mean, while you're walking around, I don't typically know which neighborhood I'm in. You just kind of know, you start to know which landmarks are in which neighborhoods. So like that's how a way people will sometimes navigate around Paris.
So speaking of how easy it is to get around and everything, how was your experience? Do you speak French? I guess I'll start there.
I speak a little French. I took it in high school, but hadn't used it a lot at the time that I went there.
How easy is it for you to like stay at this Hyatt, do all of the things with some or no French? Like for some people,
yeah,
can't do definitely. Any French.
So Paris is a predominantly like, there are a lot of people speak English in Paris. Not everyone, but definitely at the hotels, like everyone in kind of hotel service, like speaks decent English. And then this is like kind of a quirky cultural thing about Parisians in particular. I have not really been to other parts of France, but from what my friends who have tell me, Parisians in particular don't always want you to try speaking French if you don't know how to speak French well. Like they, like some, I had an actually, so I went with my family. This was like when I was in high school. So I was actively taking French at the time. And I tried to speak to, I was in some patisserie. I was getting some pastries and I tried to speak to them in French and they like responded to me in English. They're like, oh, we know, we know you're not a native French speaker, which you could look at as like a little insulting, or you could just say they're trying to make all of this easier for everybody. I tend to go with the latter way of thinking about it. So in a lot of countries, like speaking the language is like a really nice gesture of like, hey, I'm trying to understand your culture. And I would say that's also true in France, but in Paris, people can be a little particular about it. So I would tend to just speak in English most of the time, unless like somebody had spoken to me in French first. Maybe others are braver than I am about it, but that was just how I approached it. But yeah, if you're not somebody who speaks French, you'll do fine in Paris. And even if you like get lost and ask somebody on the street, there's a good chance the person you tap on the shoulder will also speak English. So as far as that's concerned, it's relatively easy to get around.
That makes sense. Any other points, miles, travel hacks that you would like to share about your time in France?
Yeah. So I think, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, I think if you're not somebody, and I would say this is true, not just of Paris, but of a lot of big cities. If you're not somebody who's lived in a big city, it can be really easy to think that you like need a car or like need to take Ubers everywhere or things like that. But a lot of these cities, and in fact, I would say cities outside of the U.S. are much better at this than cities inside the U.S. It's pretty easy to get around places. So this is less like a points and miles hack, like more like don't spend money you don't need to spend hack. Because having a car in Paris would kind of suck because there's not a lot of parking. Even if you get globalist free parking with Hyatt, there's nowhere to park if you like leave your hotel. So at that point, it's like you're paying to leave your car at your hotel. I would just try to look at public transit options whenever you can. And you've said a lot about this too, Julia, like when you were in Spain, like it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to try public transit. And it can be a little scary at first when you're trying to figure out like where to go and which direction's the right direction. But I think it's a cool way to explore a city and then also just be exposed to more people, just like living their life and everything. So yeah, definitely try to learn about the city you're going to and what kind of transit looks like there. The Paris metro is great. It's really cool. It's like one of the oldest metro systems in the world. So they're just from a historical perspective, like they're these beautiful stations you walk into, like really just gorgeous. And it's not that expensive. It's like, I don't know, something around, well, at the time I was there, who knows what it is now, but it was something around like 2-ish euros per trip. Especially if you can buy there these booklets of like 10, they call them booklets. They're like 10 trips at a time. So essentially you can buy 10 trips at a discount. Max Miles Points also has a reel about that if you want to learn more. But if you're using the metro a lot, it's really easy, especially if you're traveling with multiple people. It's really easy to use 10 trips. Like you're just, you know, going about your day doing different things.
Yeah, that makes sense. I am a huge advocate for learning how public transit works, just for so many reasons, for your own convenience. Like, do you really want to get into a car and haggle with a taxi cab driver in a language you might not be that proficient in as soon as you are landing in a foreign country and kind of jet lag? Like, probably not. It's just, at least in Spain, it is so much easier to just get on the train line, use Google Maps to figure out what stops to get off at, rather than trying to direct a taxi or Uber driver to where you're staying, especially if you're going to an Airbnb. Then that just, if you're not staying in a major hotel, it just compounds. Oh, like, yeah. I think it's on the street, but I've never been to this Airbnb before. Just public transit is good for so many things. It's good for you to get the exercise and walk. It saves you money. It's less stressful, I think, than trying to do everything by taxi. Definitely less stressful than trying to drive in a crowded city. Like, if you're driving cross country or doing a road trip across France, that's a different story. But yeah, there's no need to drive in cities like Paris.
Yeah. And I grew up originally in the Boston area, and like Boston's public transit is not great. Like it's there, but it's not great. And I miss it so much now that I live in the Midwest. It's like, you know, everything is more difficult when I can't just, you know, hop on a train and go somewhere. So it might be scary initially, but people are there to help you. Google Maps has cataloged almost like so many of these major public transit systems that you can get like stop-by-stop directions typically on Google Maps too. So if it's not something you've tried before, I recommend it. It's cool. You learn a lot. Another kind of public transit like fangirl moment, I guess. Beijing has a really great public transit system. They overhauled it for the 2009 Olympics, or 8, that's not in 2009. It was in 2008. They overhauled it a lot. So it like takes you to the major destinations. And I don't speak any Mandarin at all. So they announce everything in Mandarin and in English, which obviously was huge for me because like I couldn't rely on, you know, any sort of language ability. So that's a pretty cool public transit system too. I'd spend a whole other podcast episode talking about public transit systems I like in other countries, I guess.
Oh yeah. I could go on and on about my opinions of public transit in different countries.
Yeah. But so if you learn nothing, if you have questions about trains, I guess I'm your person.
Any travel tips or travel hacks for Paris restaurants or excursions? Did you go to any museums or anything like that?
Yeah. So coming back to my partner who doesn't really plan stuff, I didn't do that many kind of pre-planned sort of restaurants or kind of travel hacks, even for like admission to museums, because we were deciding like 20 minutes before we went. So sometimes you have the time to like kind of go through and find stuff on Groupon or some of these other sites or Viator, like any of those deal sites. But we sort of biased towards like, we're trying to maintain maximum flexibility. So we didn't do as much of that. But in general, I guess my biggest like restaurant hack is to just eat at bakeries, like eat at boulangeries and patisseries. Because in France, those things are top notch. Like in Paris, they're so good. And like, they're pretty cheap. You can buy like a whole baguette and like a bunch of pastries and like cakes and like, you know, that could be like 15, 20 euros total, depending on where you go. And so it turns out the ticket we had bought to get to Antwerp entitled us to a discounted fare at this museum. And I just happened to figure that out as I was doing some research on it. So I was able to show our train ticket, say, hey, we bought this ticket here today. Can we get the discounted fare? So I guess like it's always helpful to keep an eye out for those things too, because if you've already paid money for something that gets you a discount somewhere else, like that's easy. Like you don't have to do anything special. It's just you have to prove that you bought the thing. It's essentially like the AAA idea. It's like you have a AAA membership. You just have to know that there's a AAA fare, and then you can just show your card and have a nice discount without really having to do anything apart from know that it was there.
Yeah, for sure. In the Belgium airport, what's the lounge situation?
The lounges were okay. As I recall, there were a few of them. They were all like privately owned kind of priority pass ones. So not like here's like an airline's kind of special lounge you get access to. What can be tricky, what people don't always realize when they like kind of look up lounges is like sometimes there are lounges that are incredibly inconvenient to like where you're trying to be in the airport. It's like, okay, like there's this lounge in this terminal, three terminals over, and I have like an hour and a half before my flight. Sometimes that's not actually worth it to go over there. It's like you could hike over there and like sit down for 2 minutes and then you have to go back to your gate anyway. And these lounges were, we had arrived with enough time to spend time there, but they were kind of far from the gates we were going to. So we did stay there for a while. It was really nice and quiet. They weren't very heavily trafficked, which kind of surprised me because the Brussels airport isn't that small. Like there's a lot of traffic that goes through it. But I'd say in general, at least my experience with lounges is like priority pass lounges are much less crowded outside of the US than they are in the US. It obviously depends a lot on where you're going as and what time you're going and all these other factors. But my parents, for example, when they lived in India, I convinced them to get a Chase Sapphire Reserve card because of the lounges and like some other stuff they wanted. And they used it all the time. They never were like kicked out of a lounge. They were able to make a lot of good use of it. And I, in the US, was like, man, like I never get to go to a lounge. They're always like full or in a bad place. So I guess I'd say like, if you haven't gotten the chance to use your priority pass, just go somewhere outside of the US. Your chances are better there.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So as we kind of wrap up here, what would you say is your number one piece of travel hacking advice for listeners today, especially anybody who's interested in going to France or Belgium?
I think my number one piece of advice is travel hacking can work for people that are really, really decide far in advance what they want to do. And it can also work super well for people who don't decide far in advance what they want to do, as long as you're flexible with what it is that you do. So in Belgium and France and the Netherlands, where I was, like we were able to do everything we wanted, like really easily, and like use our points to supplement some of the costs we had. But it was cool to be able to rely on sort of this stash of points that I'd built up to say, okay, like we can get this hotel here, we can get this hotel here, we can get these credits back from our Chase offers on an Airbnb, and like just here and there, just like really pick a lot of little things to save. So if you're not a super planner, you can still do this too. You can still benefit from earning points and miles and spending them in the way that like really makes sense to you.
Yeah, that's an awesome tip. Some people always ask, when's the best time to get award space and find award availability? Either 10 months out or 2 weeks out. So yeah, it can benefit either one of those. Unfortunately, if you're one of those normal people who likes to plan your trips like 6 months in advance, that's probably the hardest time to actually find award availability.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right. And that's awesome advice. And speaking of great advice, can you give a shout out to somebody else on the internet who other people should go follow for more points and miles tips?
Yeah. Well, the main person I'd like to shout out is Megan Haster. And I don't know if that's how she pronounces her name. Apologies, Megan. She works for 10X Travel. She is their social kind of media like person. She manages their big Facebook group. Her Instagram handle is Oh, the Points She Will Earn. She just got on Instagram somewhat recently, but she, if you're ever in that 10X Facebook group, like she's pretty much always the person who's got the answer. And just like watching how she talks to people about which sorts of things they should consider or would be interested in has really helped me kind of hone my own skills of like, how do I think about what's a good strategy for me and like which things are worth it and which ones aren't? And How do you also like help people who maybe don't want to do certain things or don't understand why they're doing what they're doing? I really admire her a lot. She's intimidating in a cool way. She's intimidating in a like, wow, like she really knows it and like I can know it too.
That's awesome. And where can we find you on the internet?
I am mostly, my main presence, I guess you could say, is on Instagram. It's just my name. So at Madeline Saul. It's just my personal Instagram. So occasionally you'll see some travel hacking and points and miles stuff in the stories. And occasionally you'll see my dinner, you know, you get to choose what you want, what you're interested in. But yeah, that's my main place. I also come to Julia's meetup a lot. So I'm there too, pretty often. And I'm starting to go to more kind of in-person meetups too, as those are happening as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Madeline, for coming onto the show, telling us about Belgium and France and all of the wonders of public transit in Europe, because there's so much, and it can make your life so much more convenient if you learn the different public transit systems.
Yeah. Public transit's the best. That's my other tip, I guess. Public transit's the best.
It really is. And there's so many different ways to earn points and miles on it too. Like you can use your Chase Sapphire Reserve $300 credit. If you pay with a Hyatt card, you can earn 2x points with your Hyatt, World of Hyatt card.
Yeah.
When you pay for public transit. In the US, I don't know if a lot of people know this, you can actually use JetBlue points to book Amtrak.
So, oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. It's the only way to book Amtrak on points. So
interesting.
You have a lot of JetBlue points that you can't use in any other way, then that's a really good way to use them as well.
Yeah. The other thing that a lot of people will do for public transit sort of cost is if you have like a Capital One venture card, you can use the purchased eraser essentially against your travel purchases. So buses typically will code as travel, as well as, of course, like trains and other things. So that's not exactly the same way of like using points, but it allows you, if you want to sort of save on those costs, like you charge it on that card and purchase erase it pretty easily.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, public transit is the best. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!